Can the U.S. keep up in the rapidly changing world of spycraft? This is Future Tense. From American Public Media, I'm John Gordon. Crazy cool devices like a hollowed-out Soviet coin that could store teensy-tiny secret documents used to be the stuff of spy technology. But the tobacco pipe that housed a secret camera and paper that instantly dissolved in water have been largely replaced now by digital espionage. Digital tools are more democratic, meaning U.S. intelligence has probably lost the competitive advantage it once had. Today, part two of our conversation with intelligence historian H. Keith Melton, author of the book Spycraft, The Secret History of the CIA's Spy Techs, From Communism to Al-Qaeda. I asked Melton where spy technology is headed.
There will be an increasing need for larger computers to be able to sift through trillions of bits of data to look for patterns. And a pattern may be an anomaly in one area that then links with another area, and an alert analyst can look at this and say, well, yes, that birthday greeting from Uncle Sasha to someone in the U.S., also that person attended, trained at this camp, his name shows up here, and we can now infer that this is a person that needs to be of interest. So you'll definitely need the ability to process information at a far faster rate.
Is American intelligence going to be able to find the best and brightest to do these things?
One of the advantages the United States has had during World War II and the Cold War, and that we enjoy today, is that U.S. intelligence partners with both academia and it partners with industry. It identifies problems and turns to resources outside the U.S. government to aid in finding solutions. And this model was put in place by President Roosevelt in World War II. And it certainly aided us immensely during the Cold War. You mentioned the secret camera. In World War II, the United States couldn't get enough Minox cameras, the little tiny spy camera. So we went to Kodak and designed a camera called Camera X, about the size of a matchbox. We purchased 0.25% of Kodak's camera production for one day. Produce 500 of them. The U.S. government didn't have to invest in the technology and the land and the equipment and the people. The Soviet system during the Cold War didn't have that model. If they wanted to produce a secret camera, they had to find the land, find the people, get the equipment, tool and die work, set up the production lines, test it, put them in production. But once it was in production, it was so difficult to ever upgrade it because there was not a market for that. And their system ultimately said, if I find something that works, I'll just continue to use it. Our system was, well, if 6 months later there's a better camera, the next time we go to a large supplier, we're going to have them produce whatever is the next and the best. So the role of U.S. intelligence isn't as much that where they're in-house scientists doing the work internally, but rather where it's very smart and patriotic people working with partners outside to try to ride the wave of technology so that we can be on the front end of it, but select from the very best that's available, not commit to one path to the exclusion of other alternative technologies.
H. Keith Melton is author of Spycraft, The Secret History of the CIA's Spy Techs, From Communism to Al-Qaeda. In the final part of our conversation tomorrow, I'll ask Melton about the cleverest spy technology he's come across, and the most wrong-headed. This is Future Tense. I'm John Gordon.